Yeah, thanks, Injun, for the introduction and also for the invitation to give a talk here. Injun said that my main interest is actually in condensed matter theory, and then recently I got interested in using quantum computers for studying condensed matter problems. And specifically for this talk, I want to discuss how we can use quantum computers for realizing kind of exotic quantum states of matter. Just to give a little bit more background or motivation, so we all know that the matter surrounding us occurs in different phases, right? So water, for example, can be in a solid or in a liquid phase. And then we just know also under which circumstances we can have or kind of unavoidable phase transitions, etc. And also, due to symmetry breaking, we have several emergent kind of collective excitations. So beyond these symmetry broken phases, particular condensed matter theorists have been extremely successful over the last couple of decades of proposing fairly exotic quantum phases of matter with really exciting properties, with very interesting emergent excitations. But the slight problem is that realizing these phases in nature has proven to be extremely challenging. And this is exactly the point that I want to address, and just showing this with this cartoon picture. Like on the left-hand side, we see interesting proposals for topological phases in nature, which are very exciting, but also fairly complex. And what I want to discuss in this colloquium is basically that we take the basic ideas and strip all the extras and are left with something which is then sufficiently simple such that we can even simulate it on current quantum computers. So just by making things extremely simple, we can run it on existing hardware. And the works that I'm talking about have been done with several collaborators, including various students from a group in Munich, my colleague Michael Knapp, colleague also Andrew Green from London, Kirill Stengel, and the experimental work was done in part together with the team at Google by Kevin Zatzinger and Pedram Rusha. So let me now start again by giving like a bit of a motivation and just repeat some of the words I already said before. So the matter surrounding us is now occurring in different phases, and commonly, we understand different phases of matter in terms of spontaneous symmetry breaking. Right here, for example, we see two different phases of water, which can occur in a liquid phase, in which the water has the full continuous rotation and translation symmetry of space. And if water freezes, the water molecules arrange in a lattice structure, which then breaks down the continuous symmetries down to discrete symmetries. And that, in turn, also leads to very different mechanical properties of the two phases. And that gives us also a very general framework to distinguish different phases of matter or to classify different phases of matter. We just have to look at the symmetry of the Hamiltonian and then the symmetry of the state. And that allows us to get a pretty good understanding of which states belong to which phase. So, but over the last couple of decades, there have been several discoveries of novel quantum phases of matter, which don't obviously fall into this scheme. Right? So most prominently, there are the fraction quantum Hall effect. There are quantum spin liquids, like magnetic materials that, even when cooled down to zero temperature, wouldn't break any symmetry, or so-called symmetry protected topological phases, which are again phases which don't break any symmetry at lowest temperatures, but they do require a symmetry to be well defined, right? So my main message here is just that if we bring in topology, that there's a very rich zoo of different phases of matter. And there is currently a kind of a big effort or an ongoing effort to actually realize the interesting phases that have been theoretically proposed in various materials. Right? So one of the important candidates is alpha-ruthenium chloride 3, where it's believed that it might be near a quantum spin liquid or so-called Herbert-Smithite. There are various materials where researchers are currently trying to find realizations of quantum spin liquids, for example. But here we now want to go a different route. We just want to use quantum computers, which from our perspective now just represent highly controllable quantum systems, which we can then use to simulate different phases of matter, or in particular, realize topologically ordered states of matter. Right? So this is basically what my talk will be mostly about. And then, per se, it's like not very obvious or clear how to do it. So let's say that we have a particular candidate for an interesting phase of matter. How do we actually construct that particular state using some hardware? And here I want to now discuss two different types of phases, like two different classes of states. And the one are so-called symmetry-protected topological phases. So these are phases of matter which do not break any symmetry, but they are fragile in the sense that they require certain symmetries to be present in the system. Right? So meaning that if I break various symmetries, all their magic is gone, and they would basically be adiabatically connected to a simple, trivial, disordered state. And the second part of my talk, we'll discuss so-called topologically ordered states, which are very robust in that these phases of matter do not require any symmetry and can be classified just by their non-local entanglement. So let me start with the first part. And for the first part, I also want to just motivate the story now just by looking at some simple toy models, right? Because the scheme will be now that I want to just reduce the problem to something that is so simple that we can actually run it on current hardware. So the first toy model that I want to look at is the transverse field Ising model. Right? So we have now just two terms in the Hamiltonian. It's just the nearest neighbor spin interaction, like the Z components, and we have a transverse field. This is now a model Hamiltonian which has a Z2 symmetry, and this is just a global spin flip symmetry under which this Hamiltonian is invariant. If we now tune this parameter G, like the transverse field, we see that this system is now undergoing a quantum phase transition between a phase with spontaneous symmetry breaking, where basically the spins choose either all to point up or all to point down, and a high field phase where the spins would be just aligned along the x direction, and that state would be symmetric. And if we now tune this parameter at some point, then there's a phase transition between those two phases. Right? So this is now just a very conventional example of two different quantum phases of matter separated by a phase transition. And we also know immediately how to detect these different phases. If you just give me the ground state wave function, I can measure the long-range order of the Z component of the spin. And this, we know, is non-zero in the symmetry broken phase. And this is zero in the symmetric phase. And so now what we have is we have a phase transition between two different quantum phases of matter characterized by spontaneous symmetry breaking of the Z2 symmetry. And we can then measure the magnetization or the long-range correlation of the spin. Now, let me just take a model which looks very similar. It's defined on the same Hilbert space. Now we still have the same field as we had before. But now the first term changes a little bit. So instead of having just the sigma z interaction between nearest neighbors, I just insert here a sigma x. And this is now the so-called cluster state model. If I take this Hamiltonian, and I'm now tuning my field G, I observe at a certain level a very similar picture as before. So we have now a gapped ground state, and we tune the parameter, then the gap closes, so we have a quantum phase transition to another phase, or at least we are undergoing some phase transition. And but the big difference compared to the example that we had before is that now both left side and right side of this phase transition, the ground state has the same full symmetry of the Hamiltonian. So up to this level, we might not know exactly what to make out of it, because that might remind us a little bit of what happens with water, right? So if we just basically are at ambient pressure and we just heat up water, then at certain point we just notice that there's a phase transition between the liquid phase and the vapor phase. But then also we know that if we just heat it up under higher pressure, that is actually possible to go from the liquid state of water to the vapor state without actually crossing a phase transition. So at this point, we don't know if this is an unavoidable phase transition or not. So now it turns out that these are actually two different phases, and the way that we can understand the distinction with these two different phases is in terms of so-called symmetry fractionalization. So basically how the symmetry acts on the boundary of our system, whether this is kind of yielding a linear or projective representation of this Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, distinguishes these two phases. Right? So the details don't matter here so much, but there's like a mathematically rigorous way to distinguish what's happening left of this phase transition and what's happening right on the phase transition. And this is actually changing here, and that leads necessarily to some singularity. A direct consequence of this is that we can have a non-local order parameter, right? Recall for the Ising model before, we had a local order parameter. All that we had to do is we had to look at how two spins are correlated at long distance, right? So whether if we find a spin up here, if there's also a spin up further down the road. Now, for those two phases, we cannot have any local order parameter, but we can have what's called like a non-local or a string order parameter. And in fact, from this argument that I gave before, like how symmetry fractionalizes, I can directly deduce that if I taking just now a string of x operators acting on the state here, or like the expectation value of a product of these x operators, this has to be zero on the left-hand side of this phase transition, and it actually can be and generically will be non-zero on the right-hand side. So with this, we have now an example where we have, as we tune a parameter, we have now a phase transition between two symmetric phases, and they are distinguished in terms of some, they can be distinguished in terms of non-local properties of the wave function. And there's no way to measure this locally. Good. So now we can take these simple models and combine them to a model where we just now include the Ising interaction, the field, and also the cluster state model. And this gives us this kind of phase diagram on a triangle, where we have now these fixed points at the corner of our triangle. And then we just see that there are phase transitions between these different phases. On this triangle, I'm plotting here now this black line, this black parabola. And there's something quite nice about this black parabola, because along this black parabola, the ground state of this Hamiltonian is extremely simple. In fact, the ground state along this entire parabola can be written as a so-called matrix product state. It doesn't really matter what these are at this point, but there's just a very compact representation of the ground state wave function along this entire path.
Question?
Yes? This is a good observation, and this is true. The thing is that we still have enough symmetry to realize the SBT phase. And in this case, this is a Z2. This is just a global spin flip symmetry times time like a complex conjugation, like a Z2 T symmetry. I think this is actually a detail I swept under the rug, but it's an important detail in this story. So the symmetry which protects the SPT phase here is indeed a Z2 cross Z2 T symmetry. Thanks. Good. So now basically what we have is now that there's now a path crossing a phase transition, and along this entire path we have a very simple matrix product state representation. And what you just know directly is that if the state has this simple matrix product state representation, it can be written in terms of a very simple quantum circuit. It's just a quantum circuit of two side unitaries sequentially acting on our qubits. And this is now perfectly made for a quantum computer, because what a quantum computer gives us is the control that we can now first initiate it in a very simple product state. For example, we can now initiate our state in a state where all of the spins are just up, or like we have them all of them like some spin zero. And now sequentially, and this is what we can now code in our program on the quantum computer, we can now say that, well, starting from the leftmost qubit, and now work our way up to the rightmost qubit, and then we have produced the ground state. Right? So basically what we see here, this is now a quantum computer program that after it ran this program, it produced the ground state of this Hamiltonian. And this is now quite nice for us, because the devices which are available at this moment, they're still very fragile. So of course, if we had a perfect quantum computer, we could say that, well, let us now just variationally update, let us take whatever Hamiltonian we are interested in, we variationally optimize the ground state by just measuring the energy very often and tuning some parameters and the like. But this we can't do on current devices. The devices that we have access to are after each gate that we apply, there's a lot of there's noise, there's coupling to the environment, then very quickly the signal is gone. So that's why we need to do stuff in very short programs, and this line is perfect for this. Right, and now we can put everything together. And this is now the full program that we would run on the actual hardware. So we just now initiate all the, like after a reset, what we then get is just a state where we have all states, for example, in all qubits in the zero state. And now we just sequentially apply these gates. And there's a nice technical trick, because we are applying the same gate over and over and over again. We can use the same trick that we use when evaluating the 1D Ising model, namely we can now collect everything from, say, minus infinity to wherever we want to start measuring by just putting the dominant eigenvector of the transfer matrix, and this is now contained in this one green gate, and all the other ones are the original gates that we need for preparing the state. Right? So what we basically can do is we can now have a formally infinite system, and now we can just measure in a small subsystem of our infinite system. And this is exactly what we want to do for detecting this SPT phase, because we want to measure this non-local order parameter, which is now a string of these axes on consecutive spins. Right? So just to repeat, so now we have a program that first is generating the ground state for any parameter g that we want to have, and this parameter g is now taking us across this parabola. And then we have our order parameter, which is now this product of sigma x's. And there's a very elegant way of measuring it by just adding one ancillary qubit here, which is this one. So we just have a controlled operation where we act on one copy of the system. We apply this operator, on another copy we do not. And then just by measuring a single qubit, we can now measure this overlap. And this turned out to be the most effective way of measuring this kind of information from this IBM quantum device. And now this is the data that we then collected from the machine. And we now tune this parameter. And indeed, we see that if we now cross the the phase transition, we see that on the left-hand side of the phase transition, this order parameter is non-zero, as it should be, and on the right-hand side, it is zero. And a few observations that we made is that, first of all, there is still a significant noise on the machine. Right? So if the quantum computer would work perfectly, it would just perfectly resemble this black line, which we know exactly for this simple state. The fact that it doesn't reach up to the state, this means that we have various errors. Which errors these specifically are, I don't really know, but it is a combination of errors that we get from applying these gates, from measuring errors on this qubit, and the like. And let me also just use this maybe as a way to kind of say that the devices are really not perfect yet. So getting a signal as clear really required quite some fine-tuning. So for example, the most obvious way of measuring the string order would be to actually just do the measurement on these consecutive qubits. But on this device, the noise from the measurements was so large that for longer strings, the signal was basically hardly visible, right? So it really takes quite some effort to get results which are clean-ish. Yeah. Good. So this was basically the idea that we just now have a fairly simple toy model, which is so simple that we can find the ground state with this one sequential circuit. And in this case, we have then also a very straightforward way to detect these phases. And that got us also thinking about, like, if we can now automate it. Like, is there like a way to detect different phases of matter without specifically knowing what order parameter to look for? And there has been some interesting proposals, which is to use so-called quantum convolutional networks. Right? So that would be the same techniques as was used in image recognition, that we have a convolutional neural network, which we apply to an image, and then it tells us whether this is a cat or a dog. So the question, like, can this, or like how can this be generalized to quantum mechanical systems, where we would say that we're feeding in a state belonging to a certain phase, and then it just tells us whether this is maybe in the SPT phase and the symmetry broken phase or in a trivial phase. And the setup for these quantum convolutional networks is now shown here. It really resembles convolutional networks also used in classical machine learning. So the idea is that we are now feeding in some quantum state psi, and now we just apply to it a bunch of convolutional and pooling layers, and eventually what we do is we just measure on a few qubits. Here in this case, we just measure two qubits, and then if the machine would work perfectly well, then we would say that, well, if we measure a 0, 0, then this would be a symmetry broken phase. If we measure a 0 and 1, this would be a paramagnetic state. If we measure 0, 1, 0, then it would be an SPT phase, and it would spit out a 1, 1 if it didn't find any of the phases that we were expecting. So these have been introduced by several authors, including the work here by the Lucan group, as a phase classifier. And they have certain advantages, and one technical advantage is they are so-called Baron plateau free, which means that they are can be optimized without running into local minima. So, but there are still certain challenges, and one of the challenges is like how to actually generate large training data, right? So because of course there are billions of cat and dog pictures you can find on the internet, which you can use to train a convolutional network. But if you have to carefully craft your quantum states, that would be a big task, because you would just maybe start from various different Hamiltonians to create these phases of matter. Representatives of different phases of matter, and even if you do, there might be quite some bias. So, and here one idea that we proposed is now the following. So for a given symmetry, we have a pretty good understanding of what the possible phases of matter are that we could have. So in 1D, we have actually a complete understanding. If you just tell me what symmetry the Hamiltonian has, then I can tell you exactly these are the potential phases of matter this Hamiltonian can realize. And moreover, for each of these phases, I know that there's a very simple fixed point state. Taking the ferromagnetic phase, for example, the representative would be just a state where maybe all spins are pointing up. The paramagnet would be a simple state where all spins are pointing in the x direction, and so on. So all the fixed point states can be very easily thought of and very easily represented on a quantum computer. But just learning the fixed point states would be a very bad idea, because if you train this network on this fixed point state, they would just learn the short range properties. So for example, it would think that, well, a ferromagnet is a state where two neighboring spins are just both pointing in the same z direction, and so on. So here we then proposed a very simple scheme to actually mask these short range correlations. In particular, the setup is such that we first prepare any of those, like all of those simple fixed point states, and now we apply to it a finite depth circuit of local unitary gates, right? So as shown here, right? So we just now apply these gates to our state, which have whatever symmetry we have in our system. And by this, all sort of short range correlations are masked from the system, so the convolution network is forced to just train the non-local properties of the wave function, or the IR properties of the wave function. And then we can now generate lots and lots of synthetic data and train a quantum convolutional network. And this has now certain advantages, because now there's no bias in the sense of what kind of model, like subclass of models we are looking at. And this is most important to us, following the scheme of doing something which is simple on quantum computers, would be that both the fixed point states and also this local noise are very easily generated on actual quantum devices. So now we can test run it. I mean, here we don't have data actually taken on the quantum computer, but we simulated it on a classical computer on the same phase diagram that we had before, including an SBT phase, a trivial phase, and a symmetry broken phase. And we see here first on a very small convolutional network that the identification of the phases works reasonably well. Like the way that you can tell if it worked or not is if the dot has the same color as the background, it worked. If the color is different, it didn't work. So we see here that near the phase transition, particularly in the SBT phase, it fails. But in staying close enough to this fixed point, it actually has a pretty good recognition rate. If we now scale up the network, and we are just not acting only on 4, but now on 8 qubits, we just can reconstruct the phase diagram fairly well throughout the entire phase diagram. Right? So basically, with this, there's now some machinery which would allow us then to identify what kind of phase a given ground state of a Hamiltonian would be in. And let me just also remind you of the problem that we have now is that taking, because what as condensed matter theorists we ideally would like to have is we take now a Hamiltonian that we find extremely hard to solve, maybe a Heisenberg-Kagome model or the Hubbard model at certain filling factors, so problems that we really don't know how to solve theoretically or numerically, and then find the ground state maybe variationally or adiabatically on a quantum computer, and then analyze the wave function. This is if we could prepare these states, which we can't at the moment, then this would be a pretty good tool to actually analyze those states. But there's still this huge gap that we are still quite far from actually being able to do this, to actually find ground states of complicated Hamiltonian. Yes?
So here, does fixed point state mean a state with zero correlation
length? Yes. Is it easy to find such a fixed point state in the for SBT phases?
For example, for skew one system with isolation symmetry. What's the fixed point state?
Well, okay, so in this case it wouldn't be a zero correlation length state, then you could maybe then you would just have a product state of singlets, for example. Right? So if you just basically were to take the the case if you have like if you take an like a spin chain, like which would be like a spin 1/2 model on a chain, you could have two different SBT phases. The one SBT phase would be the singlets are like this. This would be the trivial phase, and you have a non-trivial phase of this type. If you have a spin one, so if you have a spin one, and well, first of all, you would have to represent the spin 1 degrees of freedom on using the qubit Hilbert space, say. And then what you could do is you could say that you, if you have like an integer, you could say that, well, this one is easy because you would just basically put all of them into an locally into a singlet state. And if you do this one here, what you would have to do is you're starting from this state where the singlets are drawn like this, and now you would do a projection onto this. And then in this case, you actually would have a finite correlation length. And that state also has a, that would be then the AKLT state. And the AKLT state in turn has a, from what you have shown so far, it has a sequential generation of a state, which is still fairly simple to generate. But in fact, there are shortcuts to this. You can actually create the AKLT state also in a constant depth circuit. So the information, okay, if you actually want to just do the projection to spin one, then the statement of having zero correlation length state is not true anymore. But then you still have states which you can, at least in, right, so I think the relevant part is like you can find always representatives that have zero correlation lengths because it's just about the representation of the boundary. If you demand that you want to work on a, maybe on a spin one Hilbert space, then you have still states which are fairly easy to generate, but the zero correlation length statement is no longer true.
Also, does this approach have the following approach?
Well, the claim is that this quantum collusion network does not have Baron plateaus. I mean, there are some proofs. I can't cite the paper now, I don't remember the paper from the top of my head, but this convolutional structure is Baron plateau free. Yes?
Does this QCNN procedure rely on you knowing all the order parameters for the different phases before?
No, I mean, this case, and in fact, this is a good question. So the order parameters can be fairly tricky, right? So if, for example, you only have time reversal symmetry, or if you only have complex conjugation, that's sufficient to have an SPT phase. But the order parameter that you would write down would actually involve multiple copies of a system. But the quantum convolution network does actually not rely on knowing how to do it. It would learn this itself. And there's like one fine print which I didn't dwell on here, but there's actually a requirement that you can see this in the color coding. This noise has to be translation invariant. This is a necessary condition for the network being able to actually learn the phases. So basically, all you need to put in is you need to know what are the potential representatives of the phases that you can have, and that's it. And the rest will be learned by the QCNN. Good question. I don't know. In principle, the information is hidden in there, but I don't know how to extract it. Yes?
Also, just going on the previous question. So let's say I want to do this in and let's hope that it does stand up and the whole order parameter maybe stand up.
Mm-hmm.
So would you think that you could distinguish between in group from the phases and the rest of the game and out group from the SPD phases that are beyond?
I think going beyond 1D, there are like a bunch of complications. Like one complication would be that in 2+1, we don't know. I mean, we don't have a complete classification. Like on the theory side, we wouldn't know how to write down all possible fixed point states. This is one of the issues. And the other thing The other arc is we discussed it, and like if I mean one thing that we discussed in a little bit more detail is like if you have genuine topological order, would a QCCN would a QCNN be able to distinguish an SBT maybe Z2 topologically ordered phase from a trivial phase, and there we believe it is true, like it can do it again, assuming translation invariance. Without translation invariance, there's actually a no-go theorem by John Preskill that is not possible, but I think with translation symmetry it is. But I mean, I don't have a general answer. I mean, to start with, because we don't have a complete classification of 2D, but in certain cases we convince ourselves that it is possible. Come again? But if you have translation symmetry, we believe it is possible. Good question. I don't know the answer. Good. Right. Let me now, change gears a little bit and go to 2D. So that was your question was a good segue to the second part. So now I want actually to follow a very similar framework as we did before, right? So basically, the idea we now want to look at genuine 2D topological order, but again, I want to look at some models which are sufficiently simple so that we can actually realize them on current devices. And following again the strategy of the first part, let me start with simple toy models. And the simple toy model that I'm now starting from is the toric coat Hamiltonian. The toric coat Hamiltonian is shown here. So it consists of two terms, one term being a sum over all vertices, so these blue crosses here. And on these blue crosses, we have now a product of all four sigma z operators. The second term is now a sum over all plaquettes, like these red terms. And on these red terms, we have now a product of sigma x's. And the neat property of this Hamiltonian is that all terms in the Hamiltonian commute. And thus, we find now a ground state by individually diagonalizing both all terms of the Hamiltonian. And the ground state that we then find can be easily represented using some this picture where I would say that, well, I have now a system where the spins live on the bonds of the square lattice, and now I can color every bond where there's a spin minus one red, and every spin where there's a plus one, every bond where there's a spin plus one, I just leave as it is. Then I find that the ground state can be simply written as an equal weighted superposition of all loop coverings of the square lattice. Right? So this is now a toy Hamiltonian where we have a very simple ground state, which we know exactly. And this state has now a Z2 topological order. I'm going to explain in a moment what I mean by this. And this is now the ground state wave function. And similar to what we find for symmetry broken phases, where we know that just from the symmetry breaking, we can predict what the excitations would be. The excitations of the Z2 topological order phase are these open string excitations, which at their endpoints have so-called anionic statistics, which means that the ends of the string are now point-like excitations, which can have a statistics from being different than bosons or fermions. Good. So let us now take this simple toy model, and now it turns out, similar to the discussion I had in the first part, that for this simple toy model, which is now a representative model for various exotic quantum spin liquids, can actually be represented or can be constructed very simply on a quantum computer. And the algorithm of the program is now shown here on this sketch. So the idea is now, and this I want to just go through it a little bit slowly now, is we can now we start now from the square lattice exactly the same way as I've shown it before. So the black square lattice is like the one we had before, where we would have now the spins on the bonds. So this is now the black lattice. And now I'm just, for the representation, I'm putting this black lattice now on top of the actual layout of the chip from Google. And now we see that on each bond, we have now a qubit, which here were initiated, like the quantum computer in a state, which is just a simple product state of spin zero, is now like where all bonds are now in the zero state. In the SZ equals, like the SZ equals to plus one state, say. And now this is now, of course, already the ground state for all vertex terms. Right? Because the vertex term is of the product is a negative product of four sigma z operators. So all the vertex terms are in the ground state. This is now indicated by this color plot here, that all these plaquettes, which are now in the center of, or like, which are now on the sides of the square lattice, are dark blue. Right? So we see that the simple initial state is now the ground state of these plaquette terms, of the vertex terms, but not of the plaquette terms. So that's not the proper ground state. But now we devised a fairly simple sequence of gates to apply, such that after applying those gates, basically like a zipper from the inside to the outside, from the middle, right? So we just apply first Hadamard gates to a subset of the qubits, and then we have these controlled operations, the not operations, moving from the inside to the outside, like a zipper. And then once we are done with it, we are ending up in a state where both all star terms and all plaquette terms have an eigenvalue of plus one. And that means that after running this program, which has now a depth which is linear in the linear system size, then we just produce the ground state of the toric code Hamiltonian. Good. So now we have a program to produce the ground state of the toric code Hamiltonian, and then we can now go on and play with it. Right? So now what, for example, we can do is we can now, on sufficiently small patches, actually on the quantum computer measure the topological entanglement entropy. Right? So basically we have now a correction to the area law, which for the toric code phase we know is of the value of log 2. And the way that we can access this topologic entanglement entropy is by calculating the mutual information by adding and subtracting the entanglement for different subregions as proposed by Kitaev and Preskill some years ago. And well, it's a busy plot, but the only thing that we have to look at is basically this histogram of the measurements for different partitions as shown here. And what we see is that all these values are scattered around the expected value of log 2. So what we see from this plot is that the state which is actually generated on the device, like that the qubits are in a state which has this non-local entanglement, which is characteristic for the Z2 topological order. So now we can continue playing with this device because now we have the ground state. But on top of this ground state, we can now create excitations. And we just, for the toric code state, again, we know exactly how to do it. So for example, what we can do is we can say that, well, just coming from the outside in, we're just applying a string of x's, or we are applying a string of z's, and then we just create either like an electric charge or a magnetic charge locally. And this is done here. And what we are looking at is actually the measured data on the quantum computer, right? So we see that we just started off with the ground state. We act on it with a string of sigma z's. And then we see that there's now one plaquette which has the wrong sign one vertex with the wrong sign. And now what we can sequentially apply these gates. And now we can literally see how the defect is moving around the other. And also we see that because the protocol is so simple, that the ground state is only slightly perturbed. So we just mostly stay in the ground state. But of course, there are some errors because we see that this plaquette is not dark purple anymore. It just becomes sort of paler. But this is now the errors that we have in the machine. And from this, we can now literally just measure both the mutual and the self statistics of all excitations that we can have in the toric code. And similar to the trick that we used for measuring the string order parameter, we can now also use this ancillary qubit on which we have to measure to now measure the matrix element for all these different braiding options. So for example, this one on the right lower corner, this is now the statistics that we get from taking a bound state of an E and an M particle and exchange two of them. And we know that this should be a fermion. And indeed, we see that if we exchange a pair, like an E and M pair, that we pick up a phase of minus one. Or another example is if we just take one electric particle and move it once around an electric particle, then we just also pick up a phase of minus one. And this is also exactly what we measured on the actual device. So this same idea that I just shown here now for the Z2 topological order, we can also generalize to much more complicated models. In fact, there's a similar recipe with also a linear depth circuit for general non-abelian anionic models. So like all string net models can be created in this way. But there are also some shortcuts, because so far everything that I talked about is involving only unitary operations on the quantum computer. If in addition you are allowing for measurements, there's actually a way to shortcut it to actually constant depth circuits. And there's some work also involving Ashwin Vishwanath, Ruben Verhaeghe, and others, who actually just use this shortcut to produce non-abelian anions and use also this ancillary trick for measuring then non-abelian exchange statistics of anions very recently. So now, before ending, I want to just take it now one step further. I mean, the first part I discussed these SBT phase transitions in 1D. Then I discussed topologically ordered fixed point states in 2D. And now I want to combine it and look at so-called symmetry-enriched topological phases. Right? So these are phases where we would say that we start from a topologically ordered phase, and now we just assume that there are certain symmetries in this present, and then we can actually have that the same topologically ordered phase splits up into different SET phases, so there's a finer structure. And now we can then ask, well, can we now actually find a path similar to like the first part of my talk between different SET phases? And here we just now have two steps. The first step is that we could show that there is actually now a path in the space or in the manifold of tensor network states, right? So let me just pause for a second. So in the first part, what I did, I showed you how we can first construct a matrix product state representation of this path, which I could then immediately convert into a sequential circuit. Now, I'm doing the first step, which is just a generalization of matrix product states to 2D, is that having a tensor network state. So here, and this is what we found, there's now a family of Hamiltonians where we have now an exact family of ground states which can all be represented in a very economic way in terms of a tensor network state. And this is now a transition between two different symmetry-enriched topological phases, like this is like SET toric code phase, and in between there's an O2 critical loop gas. But then there's now a problem. In 1D, that we were already there. Like we said, like, well, every MPS we just can write in terms of a sequential circuit. In 2D, this is not the case. In 2D, actually, if you want to represent it on a quantum computer, a tensor network state corresponds to unitaries plus post-selection, which is exponential hard even on a quantum computer. So now we want to have a simpler circuit. And here, let me just basically mention the basic idea. We can now take our manifold of tensor network states, and there is like a subclass of those which are so-called isometric tensor networks, which have properties of all tensors being isometries. And this in turn can then always be rewritten in terms of a sequential circuit as shown here, because then we are again back to having something where we can once zip through our system and create now these phases. And what we actually found that there's a nice constructive way how we can basically be inspired by classical phase transitions, like classical stat-mech phase transitions, and use this to construct isometric tensor networks with different phase transitions that you can then realize using sequential circuits. And just very quickly to zoom back in, so what we're interested in is now to study phase transitions, namely a phase transition between different SET phases. And what we would be interested in is, again, finding a way to realize this transition on a quantum computer. And the key idea of doing it is basically to have these so-called isometric tensor networks. And isometric tensor networks are now a subclass of general tensor networks that have this special property. And one thing that we found is that if you are constructing a tensor network state starting from a sort of classical partition function using this what we call like a plumbing operation, and we assume that the classical weights have this probability that all the tensors are basically either row or column normalized, then this is already sufficient for having a state that we can represent on a quantum computer. And then what we actually then managed to do is to find now a phase transition between two different SET phases, which are protected by time reversal symmetry. And then we can also now measure a sort of membrane order parameter, which distinguishes these phases. And one thing that I find particularly nice about it is that now there's indeed, there are now two gapped short-range correlated phases. And there's in between now a phase transition and address phase transition. We have now algebraic correlations actually in one spatial direction. So it's still a very exotic state because it has a very anisotropic correlations, but it actually resembles actually criticality. Good. Let me now conclude. So basically the main goal was to show that even with current quantum processors, we can investigate various different topological phases of matter if we just make the systems sufficiently simple. And let me now close by acknowledging all the collaborators. So most of the work has been done by students in my group, which is Bernhard Jobst and Yuchi Leo. And also my former postdoc and now faculty in Nottingham is Adam Smith, my colleague Michael Knapp at TUM, Andrew Green from UCL in London, Kirill Stengel from Riverside, and the Google team. So thank you for your attention. So, the phase diagram is a parabola. Like, we just had it. This one, yeah?
Yeah, so this is how you prepare. You said this was how you prepare states, is it? Or?
Well, so we have now this phase diagram of a Hamiltonian. For other reasons, this phase diagram is even analytically solvable. But the problem is that if you want now to represent a state, for example, here, right? So if you just want to represent the ground state here in a large system, that would be still a rather complicated circuit that you would need for realizing the state, right? So in general, the states or the circuits that you need for preparing the states would be fairly complicated. But if you are staying now along this black parabola, it's simple.
I was thinking since there seems to be like
the problem goes along through a transition point.
Yes.
I was wondering if there was anything interesting that happens along that transition point and how the state is prepared, and like specifically along that.
The critical point? Yeah, there is something special. Like at this critical point, the state or the ground state is a cat state. Like it's a state that actually has an infinite correlation length. So basically, if you take the state and you just would calculate the correlation length of the state? Do you just would calculate the correlation length of the state by, for example, by calculating the transfer matrix and looking between the gap of the dominant and the second dominant eigenvalue? You would see from this that at this critical point, it has an infinite correlation length. I'm not sure if this is answering your question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was anything interesting.
And the other interesting thing happening is that basically at this very point, the phase transition happening, so like on one side of this phase transition, you have a zero string order. On the other, you have a finite string order. Yes.
So what is the term that you add to Torricone Hamiltonian when you reach that?
Wait, so let me just...
Yeah.
Right, so the way that we came to this is that we are basically, that we think more about starting from the state. So basically, the way that we construct this state is that we start from the toric code state, like where we have just the equivalent superposition of all loops. But now what we are doing is we are putting some structure into these loops. So in particular, the loops now turn in exactly into these SBT phases that we had in the first part of the talk. Right? So we now have a three-dimensional space where there's either there's no loop segment, or there's either a spin one or like spin up or spin down, so that it actually turns into a equivalent superposition of these cluster state Hamiltonians.
Wave function rather than the Hamiltonian.
Exactly, but we are playing with a wave function to get this transition. But then for every peps, we can then find a parent Hamiltonian to which this is the ground. And
it's simple in this case.
Exactly, and then the Hamiltonian it is a local Hamiltonian, but it's not a beautiful Hamiltonian. It's just a Hamiltonian that has fairly non-local terms. But indeed, the main idea is that we started with a state where we know that we have a tensor network state, and then we can tune this phase transition, and then we find the Hamiltonian afterwards.
So if I want to retrieve this transition, this particular transition, using a Hamiltonian, how many parameters do
that? This is just one. I mean, the way that this, like we just wrote it in terms of like a 2D phase diagram. So what we then have. So here we have this parameter G exactly defined the way that that it was on the previous slide. In the first part of the talk, where we just basically have here maybe an SBT phase for the 1D case, and here we have the trivial paramagnet, and the phase diagram then looks something like this. We have here like a G equals to zero, there's a line, and then we have also here another parameter eta, which is the string tension, right? So then we would basically have a phase diagram that looks something like this. So here we have then this O2 line, and here we have now just a trivial state, which is like the state with large string tension, and then we have here now the SET phase, and then here we have now the trivial toric code. Yes, exactly. So if you just tune, so this is this. Well, here's like some O2 free boson. Yeah, maybe I
think those.
This does a 2D. Is that a 2D?
Two plus zero.
This is actually generic, right? This also, I mean, just not directly to your question, but this is actually interesting. So, if we come now from this, starting from these wave functions, we can have now this phase transition. If for example we start from the toric code model, then I have a very simple wave function. Like I can also just very easily write it in terms of a tensor network state. But now what I can do is I can just now start from this wave function and now just do an imaginary time evolution of this wave function just with a field term. And then what I'm doing is that I'm if I'm applying now this field, I'm going to a simple paramagnet. But the transition between this is actually a 2 plus 0 Ising transition. But this is not the transition that I usually go. If I actually apply a magnetic field to the system, I would actually go through another critical point, which is a 2 plus 1D Ising.
Yeah.
So basically, the phase transitions that we get between these different phases that have an exact tensor network representation, they are sort of special or fine-tuned because they are 2 plus 0 dimensional. And this is actually one of the questions I was briefly discussing about this with Inchen this morning, is that generically, I think it's believed that actual 2 plus 1D CFTs, for example, they cannot be represented by any finite dimensional tensor network state, while these exotic states can be. But I don't know if there's an actual proof for this. At least I'm not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, where there's an emergent, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And does it imply something about the parent Hamiltonian? So you said the tensor network states imply that the parent Hamiltonian can be made below the
surface? Good question. I mean, nothing completely obvious because, I mean, the obviously, for example, every string net state can be brought into this isometric tensor network form. But then also states with a finite correlation and every, right, no, no. So I think the question is regarding, I mean, the question is that probably no, because the, So every state that's adiabatically connected to a string net state can also be represented in terms of an isometric tensor network. So that includes like a very large class of states. The caveat is that the bond dimension of those isometric tensor networks would be fairly large, right? So basically, if you want to approximate these states, then you can do it, but the bond dimension or equivalently the support of this sequential circuit would be fairly large. So. But then you still might ask, like, well, what are those states? But if you just ask a different question, if you ask, like, what is the class of Hamiltonians to which you have an exact representation, not an approximate, like exact representation in terms of an ISO TNS, and that I don't have a clear answer to.
Thank you.